Joseph.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
This podcast is brought to you by GoToMyPC, easiest way to access your PC from anywhere via the web. Check it out at gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast. And welcome to The Disciplined Investor. This is episode number 117, and we are in the middle of July. It is hot and it is clammy. It is muggy in the background. You may even hear a couple of thunderstorms. You know, we're coming here down here from sunny and quite overcast South Florida. And, you know, we have a special guest on today, and I'm going to tell you, I'm going to try to do it like he is. I'm going to say, how you doing out there? I got my friend. We became really good friends, and he's got some great stuff. And I thought what we'd do is bring on Frank Curzio again, because I wanted to talk today about not the market so much. I don't want to talk about, you know, what's going on with the minutiae, the ups and the downs, the crazy manipulations or not, and the oil and the whole thing. I want to talk about how do you look at a stock fundamentally. You know, my book, The Disciplined Investor, we talk about the quanta fund technique. We talk about quantitative analysis, finding stocks through screens. We talk about fundamental analysis, looking at the ratios, the numbers, the balance sheets, the income statements. And then we talk about the charting. Charting oftentimes a little bit. Do you hear that thunder? So much for a studio, Frank, huh?
I can hear it.
So I thought we would talk about some fundamental analysis and talk about how to analyze a stock and, you know, maybe take some stock, you know, kind of just take a look at it and see what you look at. And again, fundamental analysis is different. And but Frank, tell me a little, what first of all, you know, how do you look at fundamental analysis and analyzing a stock?
The first thing I do is I grab a dart and throw it against the wall. I tell you, it's the best, especially in this market, you can't lose right now, right? You can't lose. Everything goes up. But seriously, when it comes to fundamentals, there's so many different aspects. I mean, some people look on return of equity. Some people could look at book value. You could look at PE, PEG ratios, which are also accounting for growth. But I think it's very important when you have all those aspects of fundamental analysis, you have to apply them depending on what the market conditions are. Sometimes you're going to use a PEG ratio, which is price to earnings growth, and it's a growth market. I don't know if we're in a growth market there, but we're kind of in a momentum market. So, you know, you could throw fundamentals out the window a little bit, or you may want to hold on to stocks to where their fundamentals are stretched. On other times, where earlier in the year we saw in January, February, where stocks came down so much, where you could really look at the fundamentals and you were able to analyze their debt positions. Companies were trading with no debt. They were trading less than the cash they had on their books, which made them absolute great buys. So basically, they were trading as if they were going out of business, and yeah, they really weren't.
Let me interrupt you for a question. So I want to ask something. That debt ratio issue, that's kind of interesting to me because what I've seen is this whole idea of a kind of a reverse of what we normally know. We normally know that a lot of debt is really bad, right? I mean, because you got to carry the debt load, you got to pay it off, and it cuts into your cash flow, cuts into your earnings, it cuts into your overhead. It's a real problem. It's an expense.
It could be a real problem, but the key is with debt, and I think we'll be able to find a lot of hidden gems, at least when I was on the Stocks on 10 podcast at thestreet.com, is you see companies with a lot of debt, but you also have to look at when the debt is due. I mean, a lot of debt is not good, of course, but if it's a lot of debt that's due within the next year or two, that's tremendous. That's very bad. So, you know, you're looking at a company that could have liquidity problems, that can go out of business. However, if you look at a company that has, you know, steady cash flow, but they do have a lot of debt, and it's not due in the first or second year, maybe 3, 4, 5 years out, you may be able to find a hidden gem in a weak market condition. So it's not necessarily looking at the ratio. It's more looking at when the debt is due. And you could fund it out for free looking on, like, the annual reports. You could fund them through Yahoo and the SEC filing.
Well, one of the things
and that's the way to look at it.
Yeah, one of the things that we like, FinViz, for example. I always recommend this, FinViz. They're not a sponsor or anything like that. But you know what? They have a great site. They can give you some interesting things. One of the stocks that we had been looking at, but I can't pull the trigger on, is for example, a tire company, Goodyear Tire, 400% debt ratio, And the interesting thing is, and again, I'm talking ratios for a minute. I know we're talking about when it's due and when they can cover it and all that, right? But they had a 400% debt ratio, which is a very big, as a big burden. That's a lot. I'm not talking about 40%, 50%. We're talking about 400%, okay, compared to assets. Huge debt load. And the problem is that, you know, we're saying, okay, this is a traditionally a problematic situation. But if somehow in this crazy market condition, they do an offering and some people buy up the offering for whatever the reason is, and they pay off that debt and they take it down to, I don't know, 200, 100, or maybe pay it off entirely, all of a sudden we have, you know, total free cash flow coming out of the company for everything that they pretty much do, of course, aside from materials and expenses and all that. But what the debt load is gone, that can be amazing. I mean, is that something you would look at, or is that something that's like, you know, that's still kind of iffy?
I would say that it's definitely iffy. I mean, you talk about a company that has less than $2 billion in cash and $5.5 billion in debt. Now, not only do they have negative operating cash flow, but they're not making any money, which is also scary. So you could have a lot of debt, but you're making money. That's a different scenario. But this company, those are the risks. Those are the risks you have to look at. Now, does it mean Goodyear Tire is a sell? Not necessarily, because maybe it's trading as if those risks are priced in. Like if Goodyear didn't have that debt, should it be trading twice where it's at? So you have to look at if it's trading at a premium, is it trading at a discount? So if it's a trading at a discount to its group, another thing you could, you know, and
then what group? There's two companies. No group. It's Cooper. It's Cooper
Tire.
You
know, you're right. Well, a lot of times there is a group, but when there is a group, you want to see if they're trading at a discount. If they are, maybe they're factoring in that debt. So if it comes down, maybe another 15-20%. It could be a buy as long as they can make those debt payments, and you know they don't have an enormous debt payment due right away, which they might have trouble paying. Again, I'm tiptoeing the lines here and saying you could find it, but overall, I mean, looking at Goodyear just from a first glance here, it looks very, very risky. I mean, I wouldn't buy it because the risk reward is not there. I think you have more downside risk than upside potential.
No, I tend to agree. The only thing that I see, although rubber prices have come down dramatically, which means there's no demand. There's just no demand, even though that, you know, we're hearing production increase. I mean, Ford said they increased their production by 5% last week or so. I mean, 5%, big deal. And you know what? When we look at the car, where they're manufacturing cars now and where they're selling cars, it's simply General Motors is selling in China. They're not selling. I mean, it's China is most of their demand right now.
Those are green shoots. What are you talking about?
It's more like bamboo shoots.
our favorite term, right? Green shoots.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, one of the most overused and underrated. So let's talk about a stock. So let's talk about let's go back to a stock you and I talked about earlier. There's a lot of stocks that you took on and you looked at under 10. And of course, well, you and I talked offline about the fact that under 10, when you were doing that newsletter. It was easier because a lot of things had come down dramatically. I mean, you had stocks that were 50 at one point, and then they come down to under 10. But one of the stocks
back in March, real quick, back in March, it was I think I want to say up to 24% of the stocks in S&P 500 traded under 10. That's when I was very, very bullish on the market, even though it looked terrible. But you're talking about companies like Intel almost hit 10, eBay was at 10. You talk about some of the best known in their category were under 10 at that time, and they're not going out of business. So it was a very good time to buy. You know, obviously, in hindsight, it was, but we were able to take advantage of that.
No, I understand. So let's talk about a stock that you and I had talked about. It's a company in the gaming universe called Take-Two, symbol TTWO. You know, tell me what you like about that, what you looked at it. Let's kind of take it from point by point. Let's look at the ratios. Let's look at what it is. Let's look at the assets and the balance sheets and tell me what you like about it. Tell me the fundamentals and tell me the thesis. Okay, so let's kind of go through a few things. So let's start with, I don't know, I'm trying to make this, you know, easy so everybody can follow us along here, okay? Let's take a look at things like, you know, its market cap, its income, et cetera. Whatever you want to talk about.
Before you go to that, when you look at a company, like, the first thing you want to do is find out what they do. Now, a lot of people are familiar with Take-Two because it's something where maybe their kids have one of their games. They have Grand Theft Auto where, you know, they're beating up the hookers and everything and stealing cars.
Yeah, that's a, and
it's
such a great, big thing.
It's all over, like, 2020 how, you know, kids are playing this game. So a lot of people are familiar with it. Well, when you first find out about the company, one is that they just have a new management team, and they came out and said that that some of their key titles that are going to be due this year, they delayed them. Now, when someone says delay, you really have to look at it because that could turn into a great buying opportunity. Is it delay or are they canceling their titles? If it's a delay, the stock's going to come down. If they're eventually going to come out, chances are when the stock comes down, it's a buying opportunity as long as you're patient enough. Try to not look at this market as a day-to-day thing or a week and you want to get those returns. Look at it as an investment where 6, 12 months, 18 months to let your thesis play through. That was one thing. Then I started analyzing their main asset is Grand Theft Auto. And Grand Theft Auto 4, to put this in perspective, they're expecting one of their other games to come out, which is called BioShock. I don't want to get too crazy into all the titles here. And they said it's supposed to be a huge blockbuster, enormous, which is supposed to sell 3 million copies, and that's for the quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And to put Grand Theft Auto in perspective, they sold 6 million copies in the first week.
Right. Now, when Grand Theft Auto comes out, it's an absolute, it's just, the, you know, you wait online that night, you go buy it that night, it's all over. That's, I mean, that's how Grand Theft Auto
goes. And it was so big that when this game, the Grand Theft Auto 4, came out, Electronic Arts came in and actually bid for this company a couple of weeks before it came out. The hype was so big. And they bid, I believe it was $26 a share. And you know what? It's not only the CEO and the management team that's no longer there that gets blamed for this, because the shareholders were also like, "No way, no, we're not going to take that bid." The stock is, you know, below 10 now. So you're looking at that bid. Of course, market conditions was much better than that when that happened. But now that is their main title, and you're seeing like no revenues and these delays. So the next quarter is probably going to be bad. But when the next Grand Theft Auto comes out, which is 12 to 18 months. It's not the date it comes out. You know, like with the iPhone and anticipation builds, that's when the stock starts gaining momentum, when you're hearing the rumors and people seeing like the previews for the game. It's going to be enormous. It's going to sell. It sold 13 million copies. When that comes out, you're going to see a huge build into the stock, just like you saw with the iPhone, just like you saw with the BlackBerry Storm. I think that you're going to have a lot of potential in this stock. Now, you look at, now that's one thesis. Now, of course, you want to look at the fundamentals. Well, the company has no debt, which is very good, $3 a share in cash. Its book value is around 7, 8, and it's trading, it's been trading between the $7 and $9 level, so it's trading near book value. You're seeing limited downside risk. Now, one other thing I look at is the analyst. What are the expectations? Well, you know, you look at the analyst, there's 14 analysts, there's only 5 buys, something I like to see. There's not too much, you know, high expectations. When you look at an Apple or a Google, you'll see over 30 analysts covering, and probably 80, 90% of them have strong buy ratings on it, which means there's a lot of anticipation that things are going to be good. So you're not really going to hear anything out of Apple or something like that that's really going to push the stock higher. I think we know, like, the phones are selling, or, you know, that Macs are selling. But when it comes to take two, there's not too much expectations built in, which I think that's why the company's trading at a discount to its peers. So I do think it has a chance to go up a lot further from there.
Let me ask you something. So we're looking at sales quarter over quarter are negative 57%. EPS quarter over quarter is negative 110%. And yeah. I agree with you that the book, it's horrible. It's horrible. So I agree with you that, and they have a lot of, they have 2,100 employees that are doing all what they're doing. So tell me, you know.
And there's a reason why it's down so much is because these comparisons are comparisons against when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out, which is the greatest, one of the biggest games in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So these comparisons are going to be absolutely horrible. This is what people look at and they say, wow, these sales down so much. You got to be kidding me. This stock is horrible. Not necessarily so. Because that's going to change. That's in the past. Now, going forward, not only do they have Grand Theft Auto, they have other big titles coming out. They have a good sports franchise. And also, the fact that it has no debt puts them on the trading block. Now, Electronic Arts might not come back. And by the way, Electronic Arts is doing much, much better, especially over the past couple of months. They have about $2.5 billion in cash, which means they could easily pay $15, $17, $18 a share for this company easily. So they also have no debt. And even in Activision, which is a long shot, however, with the Grand Theft Auto franchise, this definitely is a takeover candidate, and you're not going to get the $26, but $15 could be more than a 50% gain in the stock. And that's not the number one reason I'm recommending it. However, it does complement the business, especially to Electronic Arts, and I think they may come back, and the shareholders might be pretty happy to get $15. I mean, granted, they didn't accept $26,
but... But one of the things you also look at is insider transactions. And what I'm seeing is that insiders have been selling. It's only insider owning less than 4% of the company. Mm-hmm. Institutionals own about 85% of the company. But the insider transactions are about 5% have been sold off in the recent, 6 months or
in
so.
That's cause for concern? Well, you want to look at the insider sales and say, okay, are these guys just dumping the stock? No, it seems like most of the sales are automatic, which were planned already. Is that a bad thing? No, they, you know, sometimes they plan them ahead. Sometimes they plan them ahead 12, 18 months. However, you would like to see insider buying at this level, but the fact that these are automatic sales and not actually people just going in and say, okay, sell the stock right here, it went up, makes me feel a little bit better, and it doesn't seem like it's that much on the insider sales to worry me as much. So, yes, that's something I look at. And, again, that's one of the risks. You're going to see risks, and you're going to see rewards in every stock. You're not going to have 20 catalysts, and they're all going to be positive on one particular stock. You've got to weigh the risk.
I thought that's how it goes.
Yeah, I know. Basically, that's how it goes.
Now, listen, you know, and by the way, I'm not saying, let's clear this up and make sure we're clear when we're talking to everybody. I'm being the devil's advocate here, just kind of throw stuff at you to kind of talk about the things that we look at when we're looking at a position.
Absolutely.
You know, and the fact is that I say, well, what about this? Well, it doesn't mean I don't like it. I'm just telling you, you know, what is it? Because when I look at a stock, what I try to do is find all the flaws. If I can find all the flaws, and then I can say, okay, check, nope, no good, check, no good, check, no good. Okay, fine. So what's left? And what's left is all the good stuff. Now, sometimes you can get a little bit critical. And, you know, I can be one that's super critical and sometimes a little too conservative. You know, do I want to take that risk on Goodyear thinking that they'll pay? I don't know. You know, that's going to have to come as a total surprise when we see a, you know, an offering where they offer some equity and that's going to be dilutive to the shares, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, again, that's just something. So let's just kind of back
and
up.
That, you know, in all seriousness, that's why it makes you a very great stock picker, is because a lot of people who I talk to, it's so easy to look at all the positives in a stock, you know, and plus the management teams are hyping up the positives. They're telling you, they give you the growth projections. When you really want to look at stock, you want to look at the negatives. How am I going to lose money if I buy this stock at this price? That's the first question you should ask. You should worry about your downside risk. Oh, how much can I lose? Is it zero? Because if it's zero, you better say, if my risk is zero, this stock better give me 300% return. That's not a bad risk reward if the stock's trading at 5 and you think it can go to 15 if they get a certain deal. If not, it's going to go to zero. That might be a good risk reward for some people. But if you're looking at a stock to go up 20% and your risk is zero, or wipeout, then no, of course it's not good. And, you know, I'm going to full extremes. I mean, I never recommend stocks where the risk is zero, but I'm just going to full extremes to prove my point here.
So let me ask you this. One of the things that's interesting about the gaming industry right now is that there's a lot of piracy that goes on. These games are on DVDs right now. One of the things that Microsoft came out with conceptually with the Xbox is they're going to actually run games virtually, like Shanda Interactive and some of their Chinese counterparts, I think NetEase, Sina. Well, I think it's Shanda, though. I think Shanda Interactive. They have some major role-playing games. They're called, I don't remember what the acronym is now. They're not first-person like shooters, FBI, no. But there's another thing where you're in the world, and they have World of Warcraft, the recent license, and it's all in the cloud. In other words,
PC games, yes.
Yeah, in other words, you don't actually have to use a PC with a CD because the piracy is no longer there. In other words, you log in and you pay a monthly fee, and you get on, and when you get on, because the computers and internet is fast enough these days, particularly in everywhere else but the U.S.
Is piracy in China? Really? I didn't know that.
But what they've done with the cloud and all this is they've pretty much done away with that because they don't have any disks anymore. They don't have any of that going on. So what they can do is they can actually provide an environment that you pay for the time that you're on, which is really, I mean, again, I don't think the Western cultures will like the games as much, these role-playing games and all that, although, you know, maybe we can get into those one day. But, you know, it's a different culture. It's a different, you know, kind of a person of what they're doing. But, you know, we like to shoot things. They like to actually, you know, build things and do some great role-playing and all that. We like to kill, maim, rape, crash, and burn. I mean, that's kind of like am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all.
Okay. So, I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, yeah. So, massive destruction, here I come, you know, give me the game. You know, so now is it possible that they can license this again, maybe not Grand Theft Auto, which is their big game, but they can license this and do something with maybe a Microsoft or somebody where they can put this in the cloud because the piracy is such a big issue, or is that a concern, or have you even
I haven't heard piracy issues when it comes to Take-Two. It's interesting when you come to more software, I think, of course, there's piracy issues. When it comes to Take-Two specifically, I didn't see I didn't see that as a cause for concern, specifically for this stock. Of course, there's piracy with everything. You know, look for DVDs. I mean, you know, you walk up and down the street sometimes, you can get, you know, three people selling you DVDs.
Yeah, I've never done that. I've never done that stuff.
In New York, yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, and the guy says, I said, is that really the movie? Yeah. I said, you sure that's is that really a good copy? Yeah. And you get home, and it's a guy holding a video camera I got a guy's head in front of me the whole time.
Yeah, the guy gets up and goes to the bathroom. He's what's going on?
Yeah, it's funny. I know. Unbelievable. Hey, do me a favor. Let's take a quick break because I got to talk about the sponsors for the show today. We're going to talk about GoToMyPC. Frank, have you ever used one of these remote logins, like where you're at home, let's say, on a laptop, and you log into the office so you can actually access your files and stuff like that?
Yes, I have. Yep, of course.
Is it a lifesaver or what?
It is the best, especially when you're on the go. You really have to have access to all your files on the computer. Yeah, absolutely. It's the best thing ever, yeah.
And you know what? Sometimes, I mean, here's the thing, that I find that a lot of important files are on the office computer. And, you know, a lot of times you use the laptop and all that. But when you want to kind of work from home and when you're traveling, I mean, you don't want to start taking stuff on a thumb drive all the time and copying things on a CD. I mean, we did that in the old days when there was a really slow internet connection. But, you know, I mean, it's a total hassle. So what this solution is, GoToMyPC, which is brought to you by Citrix. It's, as they say, the easiest and secure way to access your computer from anywhere. So you can try this actually free. This is free for 30 days. And I don't know if you have an account with this, Frank, but you should try this just to check it out. You get a free account with GoToMyPC right now for 30 days. You visit GoToMyPC.com/podcast. go to mypc.com/podcast. And basically, you could be traveling, and all you do is on your laptop, you just go in because you don't have to really download anything major or anything. Just log in. You set up on your office computer, too. There's very easy steps to do it. And basically, all you can do is you're home late at night, and you're like, oh, man, I want to check out my emails from the office or whatever it is that you actually can't do at home when you want to actually log in your office. You don't have to go there on the weekends or whatever if you're doing things because we're kind of 24/7 these days. 2-minute setup. Go to mypc.com/podcast for your free 30-day trial. You'll be glad you did. All right, moving along. Let's talk about the next step. So you get a stock that you like. Let's stay on take two, and okay. let's get to that point. You have a thesis now. You look at the stock and you don't find any major flaws. There's things you don't like, but there's things that you like more, let's say, than the problems. You think that, in other words, the risk-return ratio for this particular stock is worthwhile. And, mm-hmm. You say, okay, it's trading at whatever the number is. Let's just say the number 10. It doesn't matter right now. Mm-hmm. It's trading at $10. And what do you do? Do you look at charts next? What are you doing next?
Charts, from looking at Take-Two, no, I didn't look at the charts. The one thing I look at every chart or every company I do look at the charts, I pull up the year chart. Okay, and before you really get to a little bit of technical analysis, which is not my specialty, which is why I use a lot of guys with technical analysis, especially when I'm in the stock and I'm looking to get out, I will call my guys in NFM and say, what do you think of this? What do you think of that? So most of it's fundamental basis. And don't be too proud to listen to somebody else, because it's not even about that. Where guys have been studying technical analysis for 20 years, and I've been, 2-3 years, learning the basics and everything within technical analysis. But these guys will really go into the charts and give me a whole bunch of different things in their models, which is cool. But one thing I do with every stock is I pull up a year chart and just look at how the company traded. And you're going to see in almost everything, most charts, especially over the past year, the stock went up. And then you'll see it come down a lot one day, or you see it go up a lot one day. Go into like a Yahoo Finance or something like that, or anything else, or Google, and look at the news and find out why that stock moved that way. Was it earnings, which probably a possibility. And what happened within those earnings? Did they miss because margins were much weaker than expected, subscriptions weren't good, whatever it is? Because that's what the company is about. That's what the street is going to look at going forward. That's what moves the stock. Sometimes it's going to be subscriptions. Sometimes it's going to be margins. Sometimes it's going to be, how many people sign up, whatever it is. But that's what the street likes with that stock. And believe me, you'll learn a ton about it just by that. And one other point I want to bring to you is it's very important for every single stock that I ever recommended, I always go back and read the transcripts for 2 quarters. Now, there's other sites where you pay for them. There's other sites where you can get them free, where you can do a Google search.
You go to Seeking Alpha, right? I mean, they have the transcripts you can
Seeking
read, right?
Seeking Alpha, yep. Yes. See, now I can say that. I'm not with street.com anymore. Seeking Alpha, yes, actually has a conference call. So most of these stocks, even the small caps. So you'll be able to see exactly what the analyst concerns are, and also go back. The reason why you go back 2 quarters is management outlines their goals, projections, and by the current quarter, you're going to see whether he's full of you-know-what or if he managed to really meet those goals. So then you know if management has credibility. It's very important to do. It doesn't take that long to do, and it's probably the most important rule that so many people don't follow. It's there. A long time ago, you didn't have access to this where you couldn't listen to the conference calls unless you're providing some kind of investment fees or investment services for these firms. Now you can. You could actually listen to what the analysts are asking, and you could read it. And you could also listen to them, but sometimes you find yourself daydreaming because
you know what, though? I'm going to tell you something. Let me tell you something. It depends on who you are and all, but let me tell you. I like listening to them. I'll tell you why. Mm-hmm. I'll give you two conference calls that I recently listened to. And actually, you know what we do? We run the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, just as a point of reference to everybody. If anybody wants to manage money for you, we have $50,000 minimum. Check out the virtual tour over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You're going to dig it, because everything that we're talking about today are the things that we do. And as a matter of fact, Frank, I don't know if he told you this. We had finally our 1-year anniversary that we could actually talk about performance, because we have a $500,000 minimum usually and all. But for this, we actually were down, and it's funny, it happened in the last month. We were down 5%, about 5.5% for the 1-year period of July 1st to July 1st, or June 30th to June 30th, depending on how you look at it, and compared to about 30% or so for the S&P.
Wow.
And we only got clipped that 5% pretty much the last month.
And you're long short.
Yeah. Well, sometimes short, sometimes long. But generally, I don't want to say market neutral, say long short.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely these days, it's kind of been rough being, let's say the last quarter, clearly. Anything short was like, what's the point? Just get my teeth kicked in, no matter how good it looked. Because we had, I can tell you, 10 different occasions of shorts that we had like a 15% profit. The next day, all of a sudden, you wake up, you're like, what happened? What happened with that? Where'd that go? You know, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. I mean, stocks that should have been down, just, you know, they went down hard. They did their thing, and all of a sudden, they just turn around one day, and it's like, whoa, hello. You know, but nonetheless, so anybody, yeah, check that out. We have a virtual tour, 14-minute virtual tour. You can go over to the site and check out and, you know, see what's going on. And it's, and if you want, if you like what you're hearing here and the kind of things we're talking about, we have a private website, a private blog just for our clients. We talk about economics all day. We bring all the data that we're talking about, news on items. And when I listen to the conference calls, oftentimes what I'll do is I'll post the notes of the conference call. Nothing fancy, but I'll tell you what happened, what my thought is. So I'll give you examples, Frank, okay? So two of them we listened to very recently was Research in Motion and Navistar, okay? And Research in Motion was interesting, but Navistar was great because you heard the inflection and the excitement in the management about what they were doing. You know, they build trucks and school buses. They're number one in the trucks and school buses. GM just stopped building medium-duty trucks, and they took over now. They were waiting for, and unsuccessfully, they got beat out by Oshkosh, for a government contract. But, you know, the stock was got an awful, awful quarter of earnings. But, you know, the fact was that the management was going through all the different discussions of what was happening, all the things that are happening, the potential for the military contracts and government contracts, et cetera. And you know what? It looked like a great deal. Now, Research in Motion, on the other hand, was one of those very basic, bland, reading the script management discussions. Okay. There was no excitement. You know, there was nothing going on. There was a couple of things that they talked about that made no sense at all. They wouldn't use the word iPhone or Apple. I mean, they were, you know, it was like the other guy, you know, the other guy. But, you know, it was like, and, you know, and like there's other phones that are selling, you know, very well these days and things of that nature. And there's a lot of, you know, competition, but they wouldn't say it. You know, they wouldn't say Palm. They wouldn't say the new Pre. They wouldn't say any of that. It was really interesting. But, you know, and you wonder, you say to yourself, you know what, are they ignoring it on purpose? They don't want to talk about it because they think we're going to think about it. I mean, what are you talking about? You know, meanwhile, the analysts are saying, by the way, the Apple iPhone has this and this and this region. What are you going to do as, you know, and things like that? Is the Storm or is the new Bold or the new blah, blah, blah going to be competition, et cetera? The thing is that I find that sometimes listening to management and understanding management, not always because they can kind of fake it and they can do whatever, but it also gives it a nice inflection of what they're doing. I just think that's a kind of a cool way to also understand what's happening.
Yes. And you know what? You could do both. I mean, you could, they have a number, which is a call-in number where you could call in for the actual call, and then they have one that's a tape, and I think it's available for at least a couple of weeks after the quarterly.
No, they usually keep them on the website. You can go to conferencecall.com. Yeah, you go to conferencecall.com. You go to the website. There's a lot of places that tell you where to get those. Usually they're not big files, so they just keep them there.
Okay, so you know you can listen to it, or you can read the transcripts. And I met with enough CEOs in my time where it seems like everything's positive. There's very few, like a guy like John Chambers, I like because he'll say, it looks a little weak here. We're hearing from our supply. We hear from our customers. This is what we're hearing. And, you know, it seems like I feel like I can get a better feel for some.
Yeah, but how much are they BSing you? I mean, listen, they come on, and back in the day when you were over the street, and they come in there to kind of talk it up because they know there was a lot of mouthpieces over there that could talk up things. Mm-hmm. They come. John Chambers comes in and starts talking about all the different issues in the technology world and what's going on and with his company and where he sees suppliers and where he sees the chip, you know, the chip world going and all that stuff and communications and blah 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 blah. How much of that can you be?
I can actually put a percentage on it. With all the CEOs I met, which is a lot, I would say 95% are full of it.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, that I actually met. I mean, and I don't mean full of it where you know, they're giving me the facts, but it's always upbeat. That's their job. They're not going to go and tell you that, don't buy my stock now. That's the bias that you have. They don't say that. It's very, like, so many people say, well, you know, you want to look at the management team before you buy the stock. You know what? That's not really that big of a deal. Of course you want to see the management team that's in place for a long time, maybe through a bull and a bear cycle, that's fine. But you know what? When it comes to management teams, there's some of them that are great, absolutely, but there's some of them that are just okay, and you know what? You really get an indication because instead of you telling me, show me what you could do. That's what I want to know. Right. Show me. You know, you're putting out the numbers. I can read them. Show me that you can make those numbers. That's how you earn credibility. Don't tell me. Show me. And that's what you should be looking at.
Right. So let's bridge this gap and talk about all the things we just talked about and talk about how, you know, a stock may look good and the fundamentals and the technicals and all this good stuff. We got that, okay? How much can you now trust the data? Because when you look at data, you're looking at past performance, 4 quarters, 5 quarters, 6 quarters back, what they do, how things are going, how it played out, of course, if there's a thesis involved or a special circumstance involved. But how do we now judge what's going to be for the future with such an uncertain environment that we live in?
That's the million-dollar question right there. I mean, it's very difficult to. I think you have to have a knack to see it. You can't really look at history and suggest everything that happened in the past usually happens in the future. A lot of times when we do analysis, especially economic analysis and cycles, that's what we want to look at. And this time is obviously a lot different, and a lot of people were wrong. But, when it comes to individual stocks, it's very difficult to forecast. And what I like to do is I like to be conservative. And by looking at downside risk, one of the things I'll look at is maybe a book value. And I won't go into the financials for the book value because, some of the book values are just too difficult to figure out for many of them. But for a company like Take-Two, when I see a book value at 7 and I see no debt, about $2-3 in cash almost, it makes me feel better that, okay, even if I'm wrong or the numbers can't be achieved, even my numbers, which would be on a conservative basis, it seems like I have limited downside risk. You be patient, wait for your buy price. Say, I like this stock. Hopefully, maybe you want to wait for it to come down a book value because I think it came down like 7 and 8 at one time. Maybe you want to wait for it to come down, and that's a buying opportunity where you say, hey, this stock almost got bought out at 26. They're coming out with another game that's actually going to increase revenues enormously, $2 a share just for that game alone. So that's going to be there in analysis as well. So, you're looking at downside, but the upside could be tremendous, especially when you have bidders in the market that want this company for a tremendously higher price.
Right. No, I hear you. But again, the difference is that you came in to this discussion at a low point here. I mean, there's a lot of players that have this stock at a lot higher price, right?
Yep.
I mean, so that's another issue you got to look at is where are they? Where's their pain? And where are the shorts going to get pain? Being squeezed.
And instead of looking at, you bring up a great point too, because you'll see a lot of times you can find almost anywhere on a lot of different sites. And again, I try to have as many sites as I can. You don't have to pay for, or give you, but you could see analyst upgrades and downgrades, and try to follow some of the analysts that cover sectors if you can. And actually, they provide their numbers too. You might be able to get in there if you're really, really good and talk to these people. And maybe. But say if they just. We'll go to the extreme, and there's a Goldman Sachs analyst, and he's usually really good. And he has a buy rating on Take-Two, and the stock comes down, 20% from his buy rating. You're able to get his report, you look at his thesis or whatever it is, and you say, wow, this makes a lot of sense. I just don't like the price, and it comes down. That's also something that looks good. I mean, that's how I got King's Pharmaceutical, an analyst at Goldman recommended it, and I read it. I said, it's pretty good, but it's way too expensive. And like 3 months later, I looked at it, and it was down 30% from the price that he recommended it, and boom, that's when I put my research into gear, and I went into everything, and that's actually made me recommend the stock, not because he had the buy rating. I mean, I just looked at the stock because Goldman's such a big firm, and it was a stock under 10, and right away that hits my radar. I said, I looked at it, I said, $10, no, I don't like it. I said, it's not too bad, but it's just too expensive. The next time I looked at it, it had news or something. I was like, where is it? It's probably 11 or 12. It was at 7. Hmm. So, that right away, I jumped all over it and said, wow, this stock's at 7 right now. It's, it's downside risk. It's trading at a discount to its peers. So, again, it's like different things that you want to look at. And there's so many different aspects. And no one technique works. If it did, we'd all use it. So Use different techniques according to different market conditions.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let's segue into something else because I got a lot of mail recently from all sorts of places that said, where's Frank? Where's Frank? And a lot of people thanked me very graciously for saying what a great guy I was. It was so nice, actually, because they said that, we look out for each other. And I really thought about, we're podcast brothers, man.
When I was at thestreet.com, they actually, they consider you competition. I'm like, we're not on at the same time. Everybody could listen to us whenever they want.
Wait. So wait. We hit the Street.com's radar?
Yeah, you hit the Street.com's radar.
Oh, boy. That's pretty good.
Yeah, but I listened to you. I loved you. I thought that you would be a big compliment to my audience, and that's what it's about. It's about the people listening. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's about, just bringing in that experience to them and saying, hey, this guy's going to make you money. This guy can help you out with this. He knows this better than I do. So you bring him on the air, and then we all learn, and we create an enormous network, and then hopefully we can all make money together.
You know what they say? You say in my town,
What do you say?
Word. You know what I mean?
I know. I've been in your town.
Frankie,
you have a very, very, very wonderful family. I have to say that on air.
I'm down with that, Frankie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Frankie and I are from the same hood, so to speak. I mean, it was the soft part of the hood, not the tough part, okay? Yeah, but still, we got the hood. He's still got the accent. I don't. But you know what? How you doing out there? I could do it too, all right? Now, listen, what are you going to do? What are you going to do, Frank?
I'm starting my own company.
Okay. So this is, we got drum. Wait. I need to put a drum roll here. I got to find a sound effect or something here. What do you got? What are you going to do?
It's Kersey and Associates, and the reason why it's Kersey and Associates and not a specific newsletter is because what my goal is, and I always tell my audience, is that I want to be around for the next 20 years, not the next 2-3 months, not to make the next quarter. That's not it. And with Kersey and Associates, I'm going to start my own newsletter, and it's not going to be stocks under 10. It's going to be stocks under 15. Big reason for that. One is a lot of these stocks have went up tremendously, and there's a ton of opportunity. I mean, you want to bring someone a newsletter where you could make them a lot of money, and I feel like within this area, there's a lot of money to be made, especially between 10 and 15. Now, for those who, you know, stocks under 10, it's going to be the same exact thing. And plus, there's going to be more things with the stocks under 15 newsletter where you'll see stocks at under a dollar. It's going to be a short, long newsletter as well. You're going to see short positions. And there's going to be no restrictions on that. So it's going to be a much better newsletter, because what's frustrating for me when I work at stocks under 10 is, you know, you want it to be your newsletter, but in fact, it really isn't, because you work at a company. And when I was able to predict one of the biggest market collapses last year, the only way I could take advantage of it is by going to 60% cash.
Yep.
And it's very frustrating there was so many shorts in there. So I think there you should be able to take advantage of any single market condition. That's what this newsletter is going to be. It's not going to be the only newsletter. One, I want to bring affordable newsletters under this, as many as 10 to 15 eventually, and go out and try to really scout the best newsletter guys out there and really bring them under one umbrella, and they're all going to be affordable, and also one newsletter that we mentioned too, right? Go ahead, you can bring it out.
Yeah, we talked about, I get a lot of calling for an ETF newsletter, you know, because ETFs, they kind of, I mean, some people are like, well, ETFs are easy to understand. I mean, some people are like, what the heck is an ETF and how they work? Because they're like, I can't even tell you how many ETFs there are. I mean, between ProShares and iShares and Diamonds and WisdomTree, and I mean, just dozens and hundreds of them, but more importantly, and they cover every area. The nice thing about them is, in a way, you could use them as a hedge, because you got the shorts and the double shorts, and forget the triples. We're not talking the triples. You know, and you got issues about them. You got stock, you know, some of them that have things like, for example, some of the oils. You know, you buy the oil, and you're like, wait. I got oil short, and it's going down, and mine isn't working. What's happening? I'm losing money on this. And you got things like Contango and all this that are built into them. You got to know what's going on with these. And then on top of it, how do you build it? I mean, do you want to know, hey, do you know you could be in Taiwan, you could be in Singapore, you could be in Korea? You know, but if you get into those, the volume is low, and you may not be able to hit them right. Japan is a great inverse ETF, but you know what? The problem is there's very limited volume. And even though they create shares all the time, you know what? It may not hit it right unless you hold it for a long period of time. And then things like the lossy effect, when you look at the double ETFs and you look at, you know, where to put your money, and should we have, you know, the S&P 500, or should I go into small cap, large cap? And we can have things, as I think about, you know, not only like almost a model portfolio, but also we can have kind of like the internals and the, you know, all about that and deconstruct it, because we have the ability to deconstruct the portfolio and see how it matched, how it correlated to the particular index, where it is. And that's what you wanted an ETF to do. You want to match a particular index or a particular sector.
And the thing with ETFs is this is, in the past year and a half or so, I mean, you really look at this area of the market where this is the first time the individual investor can participate in major markets. I mean, when, like you brought up Taiwan, you could play different currencies. You could play different countries. Every single commodity individually, sector, you can pay bonds, tips, I mean, you're long, short, any major index you want, and you can actually participate in it, and it's such a tool where you could hedge yourself, as you said earlier, and there's just so many ETFs out there that you could take advantage of, and it's such a great tool for the individual investor.
Yep.
And again, it's the first time that you could really take advantage of this, and just to explain what each one does, and just to go in and say, hey, you know what, I don't want to buy one oil company because I think oil is going hard, because you never know. Maybe they crap the bed, maybe the CEO, I won't even go there and make something up, but maybe something happens in management, whatever it is, and oil rockets, and you pick the wrong stock, you know, maybe you want to be a little bit more defensive, you want to be a little bit more conservative.
Yep.
This is the way to do it. So this is an opportunity that I think is undercovered everywhere. There's very few people talking about ETFs still in this market. And there's so many out there, so I really do think this is a great opportunity.
You know what we'll do, because this is in development. Let's just say that this is in development, because we want to make sure we can actually I think create what we want to create, give you the information. And what I'll do is I will put on this episode a little form that if you're interested in the ETF newsletter, which we don't know what it's going to be called yet, we'll call it the ETF How You Doing Out There newsletter. Okay. Or the two New York brothers news ETFs, whatever it's called,
that,
two schmucks in an ETF. Okay, how's that? All right,
that's good to me. Yeah,
but We'll call it an ETF. No, we'll just say if you want to be on the mailing list for the ETF newsletter to find out more about it, what is going on about it, we'll put a link and we'll put a form on there, put your name, email, all the information there, and we'll kind of set up once we get it going, if we get it going. But I think it looks like it's something we're doing because, you know, here in my office, the research team that we have here, you know, we do that all the time. We're looking at ETFs. We do it for a different reason. We want to get a broad-based coverage somewhere, and our portfolios that we have on the over 500,000 are primarily broad-based ETFs that we use for asset allocation and for sectors and for hedging, et cetera. So I think that there's a great compliment, not to mention the fact that the tools that we have and like the Bloomberg systems and things like that we have are just amazing. The spreadsheets and analytics that we have actually developed to, you know, look at the tracking and the analysis and the screens for that. So, you know, like screens of the day, you know, give me the top 10, for example, healthcare ETFs or whatever it may be, and how they performed and what they did and what their sectors are. You know, we may have throughout the week on this thing. So anyway, check it out on the website. So
much education, like even with an ETF, and just to throw this at the audience, is like the XHB you hear talking about the most, where, you know, it's the home builder ETF. But what a lot of people don't know is their largest holdings are Home Depot, Lowe's, Bed Bath & Beyond, when you think they're all home builders. So, you know, you have to really look in between the lines in some of these, where you might want to play the home builders, and you know what, if Home Depot and Lowe's comes down, or if that's possible, and some of the home builders do better on an economic report, on pending home sales, whatever it is, or new home sales, you might not be able to participate in XHB, and that's something that you might want to know, where you might say, well, you know, this is a good economic report, how come this isn't up that much? Well, maybe Home Depot came out the week before and had bad earnings, because it's such a large portion of it. And Apple, you know, you look at Apple and some of these ETFs, it represents 13, 15, 17% of ETFs. Some things you want to know going into these. So I think the education is really there for ETFs.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, and that's interesting that you mentioned about the home builders ETF, because one of the things I mentioned in my book that I mentioned before, you know, go over to Amazon, pick up your copy, $13, come on, you can afford it for the summer, a quick read. right, Frank?
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
And it was a good book. Yes, I will. I'm not saying that. It was a very good book.
Right. Thank you. I appreciate it. No, I do appreciate that. But one of the things that we talk about is style drift in that book. And we talk about, you know, you cannot have, if you're doing asset allocation, if you're trying to be in a sector and you're trying to, you know, just because it says a name on it, it says it's the housing ETF or whatever the exact name is, or the biotech ETF, you need to understand what's inside of it, because if you're thinking that it's going to move in tandem with the housing market, and the housing market that is the builders primarily, maybe construction companies and things of that nature, but it has a lot of Bed Bath Beyond in there, I mean, okay, fine, I get it, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Mm-hmm. This happened last year where the inverse of EEV, which is the inverse, double inverse of the emerging markets, we saw this, the weirdest action in it for a while, and it had this gigantic Japanese yen swap in there. And we're like, what the heck is that doing in there? I mean, yes, okay. I mean, first of all, Japan's not emerging. Second of all, I didn't want a currency exposure. Yeah. What are we dealing with here? And that explained the style drift and the non-correlation to the particular index that we were using. Kind of a crazy situation, but it didn't work well. Anyway, so let's just close and ask you about this. So we talked about a lot of the stocks that you have, the take two, and that you like that, and we talk about before we talk about Massey and Ashland. What is your general take on like an Ashland and a Massey now?
Massey, I still think right now, I think it's a buy. If it's under $20, I still, you know, I was able to pick it up at 10. But Ashland's an interesting situation, because one of the things you want to do is when you have your thesis, and say if your thesis plays out and the stock goes a lot higher, when do you sell? And sometimes that's the hardest thing to determine. And with Ashland was at 7, and it's now near, it's much, much higher. It almost hit 30. And you're looking, and people say, wow, it's 30, now I should sell. Not necessarily, because now you want to do some kind of comparative analysis, and it's still trading at this level because the earnings rose so much along with their stock price, where you're looking at, and it's still trading at a discount to its peers. If it ever comes to in line, then I think that would be a good sell. That's the time to take profits. But just because you saw the stock move up so fast, reanalyze everything, if that is a word. But analyze everything again. So you can see it, you know, and compare it to everything else in the industry, and you say, wow, you know, it still has, you know, all the reasons why I bought it, it's still there, plus it's still trading at a discount to its peers, which is important. So it's worth holding. I mean, sometimes people look at it and say, wow, this stock's up like 200-300%. You know, I should sell it. But, you know, you might want to do a little bit of comparative analysis. Again, something you could do in a lot of free sites.
The other thing you could do is you could sell part of it. Nothing wrong with taking a little profit.
Absolutely. You definitely want to sell part of it on the way up, absolutely. But in order to really take your full profits or to let your winners ride, which, you know, it's kind of a good market to let your winners ride, you really want to see and look at valuation, so that makes a lot of sense.
Well, let's talk about that for 1 second. Let's kind of close on this note. What happens if we see another round of problems. What if? I don't know. One day, you know, whether it's, you know, right now a little bit bad or a lot bad or whatever. I'm talking about, you know, I'm not talking about necessarily only a market event. I'm talking about like way. There's a realization that if, I'm just kind of throwing this out because we know the good here. Again, always look at the good, fine. What if, like, all of a sudden the markets, you know, I don't know, sometime implode a little bit? And I mean, what are you gonna say that, okay, buy more at these levels, or is it, you know, like in Ashland or whatever, or take two? Is it gonna be okay? There's gonna be bargain central, or are you gonna say, you know what, let's wait for this to play out a little bit, or how does that work?
On an individual level, I think you have to look at balance sheets. I think that's very important, especially ones that have debt, which we went over earlier. Even if debt's due later on, but if they do have high debt positions and we see the market roll over, those are the ones that are probably gonna go down the most. Also, you want to look at this market where, yes, we're seeing, you know, everything seems to be positive, but look at the negatives. What's a negative out there? And I'll ask you, too, what's a negative out there that's not really factored in? I mean, we know construction loans, you know, that's in trouble, the credit card loans, I mean, that's enormous.
You want me to give you a list? You want me to give you a list?
You know, inflation, but you know what? The fact that they're all in front of us for us to see usually means that they're priced into the market already. So what are some things that
I disagree. I disagree entirely.
No, but here's the thing. That's the thesis that's out there. So a lot of people believe, like, how bad is it going to be, where the government's out there also monitoring this, and it's unfortunate that you have to throw in the government as one of those, you know, analysis things that you use to...
No, but what I'm saying is that I think most people believe that basically this whole thing is over because we've been told it's over 100 different times, which is fine. Yeah. Let it be over. I'm good with that. Let it be over. I'm not saying it is or isn't. But I think that most people believe that it's over. I think most people believe that... It's not going to get any worse. It can't get any worse. If it gets any worse, it's going to be fixed anyway. And there's just an unlimited amount of money that the government is going to have, you know, pony up. And it's not going to really affect us because we're kind of removed from it. The word billions no longer means anything. And the fact of the matter is, what is it going to be? Was it going to be something, I don't know, Harry Dent talks about some massive insurgence in a third world country like Iran or maybe in North Korea that caused some problems, or whether it's going to be the realization that, you know, here we're really kind of fiscally broke entirely. Are we going to see something, you know, in a state or some other kind of situation where we didn't know about and where, you know, the realization is we've seen a lot of, you know, numbers look a lot better, but they were not better. They were just better than worse. And I don't know. Again, I'm not speculating that things are going in any direction, but you're asking me. I'm just saying that there's a lot of things that I think that have been discounted now the other way around, because now one of the things that happened is it doesn't matter how bad the news has been in the final month of the second quarter. It was like kind of no matter how bad it was like, oh, one day it will be better. We're probably closer to the end of the problem than the beginning, right?
Yes.
So I don't know. Maybe those things can be factored in, and maybe those can. But the fact of the matter is I think we need to be on top of that.
We do have to be on top of that. And where I was going with this is one of the things, you know, with the construction loans, and I think we're going to see a huge problem with prime loans. I think that's not factored in already. I think a lot of prime loans are going to go into default. We're starting to see that now based on recent data. But I think what's a huge concern is we just had these stress tests. If unemployment goes well above 10%, say if it goes to 12.5%, which is a possibility, who knows? We've got a lot of things coming out, a lot of game changers, cap and trade, whatever, that could be terrible for the markets. The health care, terrible for the markets. Who knows? Maybe it works out, maybe it doesn't. My point is, if we go to the levels of unemployment like 12%, then we're going past like what the stress test results were. So then you're talking about more capitalization for the banks. That I do not think is factored in, and that means that we could be in a lot of trouble, for at least for equity markets. So is that factored in? No, I don't think anyone's really talking about that. Could it happen? I don't know. Could it happen 12%? Maybe. I don't know. But you just know that there's a possibility that could happen. This way, you know, you always have that cautious mentality with your portfolio. But, yeah, you know, in terms of that, it's such a risky market right now. It just seems like, you know, we're waiting for one or the other side to blink. I mean, is it going to be the bulls, the bears? It just seems like, you know, for the next couple of months, we're going to be within, like, a very tight trading range.
Right. You know, the thing is that last week, I read an article, and it said the bank's 23% decline since May, so this was in the beginning of July, I just pulled it up again, signals a rough time for the S&P ahead. I mean, I agree that the banks could be a big issue here because they did totally cover up earnings last quarter to make it look like it was a good thing by a couple of different accounting tricks, and I wonder if that's going to persist. But we'll see. You know, there are some good things also on the horizon, so it's not all, as we both discussed, not all negative. But you know what? There's a lot of things that we need to be watching right now to ensure that, you know, things aren't going to either go against us terribly, because that's no fun.
And I wanted to say one thing before we end, because I didn't mention it before, is the website's going to be frank.curzio.com. It's not up yet. It's getting, you know, there's a ton of work that needs to go behind it. I want to make sure it absolutely works perfectly, because I want it to be, you know, flawless when it comes out. This way everybody gets the alerts for the newsletter and you're going to be able to find everything that I'm doing on there.
Oh, great. Very good. So we will, when it's up and ready, we will have the inaugural champagne bottle, and we'll crash it across the bow. How's that?
Sounds great. All right, thanks. Great.
Frank Curzio from frank.curzio.com, which will be there soon. And, of course, Stocks Under 15 and maybe a new ETF newsletter. Make sure to head on over to the site. Frank Curzio, you're a good man, a good golf player, and I appreciate you coming down and spending some time with us here, learning how to analyze from a fundamentals perspective stocks on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Have a great day, buddy.
Thanks, bud.
Thanks. Anyway, you've been listening to Frank Curzio, and you know that's fun. I always have a good time with him because he's a real. I mean, he's a guy that you could talk to, and you know, no pretense, and you know, just really good, down to earth, fundamental analysis, and really kind of knows, has great classical training in this area, and I really enjoy talking about it. And I get so many emails that have asked me to have him back on, so we'll try to get him on regularly to talk about things, and especially learning what to do. We'll see you soon. We have some great things lined up. Jim Rogers, I told you before, is going to be coming up on the podcast shortly. Last week was great with John Najarian talking about options. We got all sorts of things lined up for you, and if you have any suggestions, somebody you want to hear, well, send them on off to me. Anything you want to talk about, ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and I laid on you all the things I want you to do. Buy the book so you can learn more about investing. I want you to make sure to, if you want to become a client, go check out the virtual tour. And of course, if you're interested in the ETF newsletter with Frank Curzio and myself that we're working on, and we're seeing if it's going to be a feasible thing to do, go to the website right now. We'll put a link that says ETF newsletter. We'll just call it that right now. Interest in the ETF newsletter, this particular show, podcast, episode, and go to the website at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And just put in your name, address, and information. We'll get it there. Thanks for joining me. Have a profitable week. Have a great week. Take some time off. Enjoy your family. Have some fun. I'll see you soon. This is Andrew Horowitz signing off the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.